Clooney waved his standard above the sun-flecked dust rising from the road. Gradually, the horde ground to a halt. Shading his eye against the sun, he stared up at the walls.
Surrender to Clooney the Scourge!
Go boil your head, rat!
Came Constance's gruff reply. Clooney took a pace back, letting his standard dip low. 20 of sling rats ran forward, whirling their stone-laden weapons. They let fly a volley at the ramparts, shouting blood-curdling war cries. The stones clattered harmlessly off the wall and fell back to the road. Clooney cursed inwardly. For all his show of force and arrogance, he had made a strategical error. The sun was in his army's eyes. The defenders had the advantage. This soon became clear when a platoon of otters on the ramparts unloosed a rattling fusillade of heavy pebbles. Pandemonium broke out in the vanguard of Clooney's horde, with cries of agony as the pebbles found their marks. One stone actually struck Clooney's helmet.
Back to the ditch and the meadows! Stay out of their range!
Clooney did his best to keep his voice even. As the army retreated to safety, he was the last to go, willing himself to walk slowly, as if that were the way he had planned it. 4 rats lay dead near the wall, and Kilcony's drum stood unattended in the road. Basil Staghair sniffed dryly.
Not a very well organized initial sortie for the invincible horde. Our chaps took the wind out of their sails, what?
They do have to wait till sun moves round, commented Formal.
But we don't,
cried Jess.
Bring the archers! Keep the slings going! Let's give that mob in the ditch something to think about!
Out in the safety of the meadow, Kilcony attempted to soothe Clooney's ego.
Ah, what a sly old move of yours, sir. Lulling them into a false sense of security. Make them think they're winning. That's the game.
Unexpectedly, Kilcony received his reward for flattery at the wrong time. A thwack over his head from the standard.
Shut your mouth, ferret! Get me some sort of command post rigged up here. Cheese thief, where are the gangs with that battering ram?
Coming up right away, chief,
called Cheese Thief as he trotted off to find where the ram carriers had got to. It was not long before the tiny harvest mouse archers were bending their bows, sending small pointed shafts darting into the ditch. These, supplemented by the stouter arrows of the field mice and the otter slingers, caused many wounds and great discomfort to the would-be attackers, pinning a good number of them down. Morale was low because Clooney had ordered no retaliation until after midday. Jess Squiddle rappelled swiftly down to the road on a rope. Looping the rope's end around the old water butt that had been the ferret's drum, she sprang inside, calling up to the parapet.
Haul away, Constance!
The barrel fairly flew up under the badger's strong paws. Jess was quite pleased with herself. She had plans for the drum to beat the rats. Basil Staghair strode the parapet with a swagger stick tucked beneath his arm. He dodged around the Squiddle, who was rolling the barrel along. Retaining the dignity befitting his rank, Basil kept up a constant stream of orders.
Fire at will, you mouse types! Otters, pick out your targets! Any moles here, report to Formal down in the grounds right away!
The hare had cast off his leg bandage. Now that he was back in active service, the honourable war wound was completely forgotten. Meanwhile, back at the meadow, Clooney sat brooding under a makeshift tent. At least the ferret was good for something. Cheese Thief came hurrying up, urging on the contingent of battering ram carriers. Hoping to find favour with Clooney, he had put himself at the head of the party, helping them to carry the cumbersome object.
Come on, mates! Let's knock on the abbey door!
Having negotiated the ditch, they charged across the road. Once they had passed a certain point, it created a difficult angle for the defenders on the wall to fire at them. The massive ram shuddered as it smashed against the gatehouse door. With Cheese Thief shouting encouragement, the ram carriers took a short run back and battered the door again. Clooney was heartened to see things going right for a change. There was more to Cheese Thief than he had at first thought. The door was rammed a third time. Now creatures on the wall stood up in full view as they retaliated by firing down on the ram carriers. Clooney called up his best slingers and archers, ordering them to pick off the defenders. Fortunately for him, the sun was starting to move southwards, and the otters and mice on the ramparts were clearly visible. Clooney's archers caused numerous casualties, forcing the defenders to drop below the parapet. The battering ram continued, although as yet it had made no lasting impression upon the solid construction. Missiles from the wall had slackened off. giving Clooney's horde a chance to desert the ditch for the relative safety of the meadows. Clooney appeared well satisfied for the moment. He called Kilcony to his side.
This is more like it, Ferret. Right, get the tunnel gangs, gather your weasel, stoats and ferrets. Take them back along the ditch to the southeast corner of the abbey wall. When it is dark, I'll send you a signal. Then you can start tunneling through the ditch wall, across the road and under the abbey wall. Is that clear?
Kilcony threw an elaborate salute.
Sure, it's clear as the morning dew, Your Honour.
Clooney closed his eyes, intent upon keeping his present good mood.
Then get going and try to get it right this time.
The battle continued sporadically all day and into the evening. The ram carriers kept up their attack, but somehow the great door withstood them. When the last vestiges of twilight were gone, Constance called the captains together. They squatted beneath the parapet in darkness as the badger outlined the situation.
Listen, we're all right for the moment, but sooner or later something will have to be done about the battering ram. Has anyone got a good idea? I'm open to sensible suggestions.
Below them, the ram kept up its remorseless battering. Ambrose Spike had reported some minor splintering at the top inside edges of the door, but the shoring of earthworks was holding out. Formol had assured them that any attempted tunnelling would take at least a few days before signs showed. Meanwhile, he and his moles were carefully monitoring the earth in the abbey grounds. Throughout the day-long battle, the animals not directly involved in the fighting had been busy too. Father Abbott was tending the wounded in Great Hall. Friar Hugo was constantly sending Cornflower and the helpers back and forth to the ramparts with food and drink. Mrs. Church Mouse and Mrs. Vole were making bandages from old clean sheets. Silent Sam had been left with Tim and Tess, the Church Mouse twins. He had played with the infants until they fell asleep in a heap of bandages. Sam wanted to go up on the wall, but his parents had forbidden it. Slipping out of Great Hall, he passed the time for a bit, listening with an ear to the ground in the company of the moles. But Sam soon became bored. He stabbed at the earth with his tiny dagger, imagining that rats were popping up from make-believe tunnels. After a while, he wandered over to the foot of the wall and sat sharing some food with Jess. The little squirrel signalled to his parents, asking her what she wanted the big battle for. Jess Squirrel took her little son upon her knee and explained. She had an idea that the barrel, filled with something or other, could be dropped down upon the ram carriers. But she was not too sure what it would be best to fill the barrel with. Sam jumped down from his mother's knee. The barrel was lying on its side. He sprang up on it and walked it about, rolling it very skilfully under his feet. All the time he was sucking hard on his paw, trying to think how he could help. The tunnel gangs lounged about, leaning on the sides of the ditch. Kilcony stretched full length on a mossy patch.
Ah, I tell you, this is the life. Better than getting shot at. My old mother always said, get a good job and keep your head down.
Scumnose came creeping along in the darkness. He nudged the ferret.
Clooney says you can begin tunnelling now.
Kilcony marked a cross on the ditch wall with his claw.
Right you are. We'll start about here, buckos. Come on now, dig for victory.
Here ends Book 2 of Redwall.
Book 3, The Warrior. Chapter 1. The invasion at Redwall continued throughout the night, the whole scene illuminated by a bright summer moon. Neither side gave the other any quarter. When the main action went into a lull, sporadic sniping would break out, bow, lance, sling and spear, all coming into play with deadly effect. One thing that remained constant throughout the battle was the sound of the battering ram pounding away remorselessly at the abbey gatehouse. Clooney made it his duty to assess personally the progress at the tunnel workings. He was scathingly critical of the small hole that had been gouged into the side of the ditch, roundly cursing any creature who dared to complain of difficult obstacles.
Can't get past the rocks and tree roots, my eye! Idle, stupid laziness! That's what is holding up the progress of this tunnel! I'll be around first thing tomorrow to see how much farther you lot have dug, and if it's not to my liking, I'll cave it in and bury the whole shirking crowd of you!
However, the battering ram pleased Clooney much more. He knew it was worrying the Abbey defenders. The rat crews that manned the heavy object were changed every hour by Cheesedheef, who stayed with the ram the whole time, encouraging the carriers on to greater efforts. Clooney had gained a new respect for Cheesedheef. Mentally, he had already promoted him to second-in-command. Sensing this had made Cheesedheef redouble his efforts. He worked the rat crews like a slave driver. No rodent dare complain about one whom the chief held in such high regard. Constance stood on the wall with the captains. The badge's brow was furrowed with anxiety. Basil Staghair, the most seasoned campaigner among them, was the only one who apparently took it all quite lightly.
"Upon my word, the way those blighters down there are carrying on with the jolly old ram, they won't need to tunnel in soon. I'll give it half a day at most. Then we'll have rats piling in over the shoring, what?"
Ambrose Spike positively bristled at the nonchalant air.
"Well, I must say, that is a comforting thing to know. Any more little gems of information to cheer us up, eh?"
Basil strode off in high dudgeon, re-emphasising his previously forgotten limp.
"Deary me, old lad, no need to be so touchy. Merely making a military observation, you know."
Constance called the two old friends together.
"Look, it's no use quarrelling among ourselves. We should be thinking of a solution. Come on, you two, stop sulking and be pals again."
Smiling sheepishly, Basil and Ambrose shook paws. Winifred the Otter pounded the stones of the parapet in frustration.
"I say, there's got to be a way to stop that confounded ram. We've lost far too many defenders. They get picked off every time they stand up to retaliate. It's got to be a very simple solution. A small obvious thing that we've all missed."
Jess Squiddle, aided by Silent Sam, manoeuvred the battle up onto the ramparts. She patted it.
"Something simple, like this."
The captains gathered around the battle examining it. The top had been covered over with gauze. A strange noise issued from within.
"Well, Jess, don't keep us in suspense. What's in the barrel?"
"Shall we tell them, Sam?"
Silent Sam gave a broad wink and tapped a well-sucked paw against his nose. He and his mother were enjoying this.
"What we have here, my good comrades in arms, is stage one of our anti-battering ram scheme, thanks to my small offspring here who found the hornet's nest."
Basil clapped the two squirrels soundly upon their backs.
"Of course, that's the ticket. A hornet's nest in a barrel. Just chuck it down on the beastly old enemy, what?"
Jess and Sam smiled with wicked delight.
"But that's only the first stage. Here's the second."
She and Sam ducked out of sight. A moment later, they were back with two buckets.
"Two pails of good, fine, slick vegetable oil. The minute they drop the battering ram, we'll tip this down all over it. Let's see them try to break a door with it then."
Jess and Sam were congratulated heartily by all. Smiles appeared on faces that had been gloomy shortly before. Sam bowed graciously each time he was thanked. Nobody was refusing him permission to be up on the wall now. Down below, the scrabbling of rats' feet and the monotonous thud of the ram continued. Winifred and Constance lifted the barrel onto the parapet's edge. They angled and tipped it until a fine, delicate balance had been achieved. The badger peeped over at the activity below, waiting for the best moment. She beckoned Silent Sam to her. The time was exactly right.
"Pray, would you do us the honour, Master Samuel?"
said Constance with mock courtliness. Feigning an equal gravity, Sam made an elegant leg and delivered a short, sharp kick to the barrel. Buzzing angrily, it dropped out of sight over the edge of the abbey wall. There was a crash and a yell, followed by the shocked screams of agonized rats. They milled about in the roadway, dancing in pain as myriads of maddened hornets attacked furiously. Some rats ran off down the road, others hailed themselves into the ditch, pursued by the relentless stinging insects. The long battering ram lay unguarded, conveniently spotlighted by the rats' abandoned torches. Two well-aimed buckets full of vegetable oil were hailed down. They smashed directly on target, saturating the entire length of the ram. Before the hornets could seek out new victims, Basil ordered the defenders down to the gatehouse study, where they had a celebration snack. Clooney stooped inside the tunnel workings, surrounded by as many of his followers as could pack in without causing mass suffocation. Kilcony held Clooney's cloak over the entrance hole. Outside, the air resounded with buzzing and pitiful screams. The ferret gingerly touched the tip of his swollen nose. Clooney stooped in stony silence. He did not sit or attempt to touch his own injuries. The others might laugh. Dumbly, he endured the pain of the fiery stings. Farther across the meadows, there was a mass scramble of bodies into a small pond. The hornet zinged about, waiting for snouts to break the surface. Dawn revealed a sadly disorganized horde. Clooney wisely held back his temper. Many of his soldiers looked so demoralized that they were liable to make a run for it and desert. He reasoned that there was little to be gained by adding insult to injury. 7 rats, 2 ferrets, and a stoat lay dead in the ditch. Unable to escape the main body of hornets, they had been stung so many times it had proved fatal. Cheese Thief limped slowly up, covered in ugly lumps.
Chief, they've poured some stuff over the battering ram. We can't hold on to it. We tried, but it's like trying to pick up a wet eel. The blasted thing slid right out of our claws. One of the bearers had both legs broken when it slipped and fell. Sorry, Chief, but we didn't expect them to think anything up like that. Hornets and slippery stuff, it's not fair.
Clooney pointed across the meadow.
Regroup the army over there. Let them feed and rest. Send someone scouting for dock leaves to rub on those things. I'm going into my tent to do some serious planning. We're not beaten yet. Not by a long chalk. They can't produce a hornet nest every day.
Clooney stumped off dejectedly, rubbing his backside with one claw. There were one or two insect sting casualties to be treated at the Abbey Infirmary. Fortunately, Brother Rufus had a specific compound that he had invented some years back to deal with such emergencies as summer stings. Silent Sam was reenacting the entire episode in pantomime for the benefit of Tim and Tess and some other infant creatures. They were in tucks of laughter at his antics, as Sam slapped at his fur and performed somersaults with a comical expression on his face. Constance and the captains assembled back on the wall after a few hours' rest. They could see no immediate threat from the horde licking their wounds across the meadow. This gave ample opportunity to assess the damage caused to the gatehouse door. Jess Squiddle was lowered over the ramparts on a rope. She went swiftly down and inspected the door. In a short while, she was back up again to report that although there were many deep dents and at least 2 long cracks, the old gatehouse door was still holding well. Constance decided that later on they could lower some carpenters and smiths to deal with the repairs. Of late, the badger had become preoccupied with an idea that was rapidly turning into an obsession. Cut off the head and the body would die. By some means, she must kill Clooney the Scourge. Out across the meadow, she could plainly see the warlord's tent. In the strong sunlight, the badger watched the silhouette of the big rat moving about behind the canvas. The main problem was that the tent had been pitched too far out of range for sling or bow. Unless the weapon was big and powerful enough to reach that far. That was it. A large, powerful bow. Something along the lines of a crossbow. What if it could be mounted upon the ramparts, unknown to Clooney and his horde? At a given time, say mid-afternoon, Clooney's shadow would be clearly visible through the tent fabric in the bright June sunlight. A big arrow or bolt, properly aimed from the bow, and twang, exit Clooney. Delighted with the plan, Constance shared her knowledge with only one other creature, the solitary beaver. Enlisting the aid of the beaver's highly capable molars, the badger left him gnawing away at a yew sapling in the orchard, while she went off to find an arrow that would fit her brainchild. An ash staff that had seen service as a candle snuffer proved to be ideal. With a heavy stone, Constance flattened the conical brass extinguisher fitted to the top of the staff until it resembled a vicious-looking spear. She flighted it with duck feathers. A thin plaited climbing rope rubbed beeswax made an excellent bowstring. With the help of the beaver, Constance bent the yew sapling against the abbey wall and strung it to the right tension. Together, they mounted it upon a dining table with nails and strapping and bore it up to the ramparts. Constance would only grunt brusquely at anyone inquiring what the strange contraption was for. Only she and the beaver needed to know that. The two creatures sat out upon the ramparts, sharing lunch, conversing in low secretive tones.
That should do the trick.
Aye, let's keep our paws crossed that it does. We'll only get one shot.
Ah, one shot is all we'll need.
Shall we wait until the sun has passed its zenith? That way we can see him clearer.
Good idea. When the Joseph Bell tolls, mid-afternoon shall be best.
Having finished lunch, the pair lay out like old watchdogs on the sun-warmed stones. Half an hour later, they were snoring. Clooney was a resourceful rat. He often wished that his army thought as he did, instead of being just a mob of incompetents. But then, if the horde were as clever as he was, there would be no need of a leader. Such was life, he reflected. Nobody could think up a new strategy as he could. And this time, Clooney reckoned, that he had hit upon a foolproof plan. He strolled across the meadow and hand-picked 30-odd rats.
Follow me, cheese thief. I'm leaving you in charge until I get back.
Without another word, Clooney marched off with his selected rodents, first to the upturned haycart in the ditch down the road, then a quick circle around into Mossflower Wood. Like his predecessor, Redtooth, Cheese Thief was ambitious. He interpreted Clooney's order as the much-coveted promotion to second-in-command. The chief had not even acknowledged Darkclaw. In his elation, Cheese Thief even forgot the painful hornet stings. He strutted about, asserting his newfound authority.
Darkclaw, send those ferrets out for more dock leaves, will you? Oh, and see that no one else strays too far. I'll be in the tent if you need me for anything, but try not to disturb me.
Darkclaw scowled resentfully. Nevertheless, he carried out the orders. If he didn't, he was certain that Cheese Thief would report him to Clooney for insubordination. Cheese Thief swaggered into the tent and glanced around. Clooney had left the better part of a wood pigeon, some cheese, and there was still a handsome measure of the best St. Ninian barley wine in the chief's canteen. Cheese Thief tucked in with satisfaction. Redtooth used to, so why not he? It was his entitlement as Clooney's second-in-command. He sprawled languidly in the warlord's chair, tilting it and resting his feet on the map-strewn camp table, happy in the knowledge that his destiny was being fulfilled. He secretly hoped that it would start raining heavily. Then the rest of the army would recognise his exalted position when they were outside getting soaked, while he was snug and dry inside the tent. Cheese Thief tried studying the maps. He could not make head or tail of them, and soon grew restless. There was Clooney's poisoned tail barb, which he wore in battle. Careful not to pierce his claws by accident, he fitted it to his own tail. Next, he draped the warlord's cloak about him. It was a bit long, but what a dashing figure he must cut. For a while, he contemplated the massive war helmet. Peeping around the tent flap, he checked that there was no sign of the chief returning. Good. Clooney would probably be gone for another hour or two yet. The Joseph Bell tolled for mid-afternoon. Constance shook the beaver into wakefulness.
Look, what a golden opportunity. There's the Scourge himself, all dressed up to kill. We'll never get another chance like this.
The giant bow worked perfectly. Cheese Thief's latest promotion was swift but brief. He never knew what it was that snuffed his life out. Chapter 2 Matthias screamed aloud with fright inside the cat's mouth. It was sloppy and hot, pink and black, smelling indescribably, and seemingly full of huge yellow teeth. The marmalade cat spat the young mouse out upon the barn floor. He lay wet and sticky, quivering all over, dust and straw clinging to his fur. Instinct warned Matthias to lie inert and play dead. He had no chance to make a run for it, surrounded as he was by the cat's paws. He could not stop his body from quaking badly. He lay staring into the feline eyes, great twin pools of turquoise flecked with gold. The cat stared back at Matthias in disgust. Disdainfully, it wiped a fastidious paw across its soiled tongue and spat as if trying to rid itself of a horrible taste.
I simply can't abide the taste of mouse. Filthy little vermin. One can never tell where they've been.
The cat's voice, though cultured, was a high reedy tenor. It would have sounded comical under different circumstances. Matthias lay as still as possible. The marmalade cat prodded him with an indolent paw.
Oh, get up, you disgusting little beast. I know you're not dead.
Slowly the young mouse rose to his feet. The cat seemed uninterested in him as a possible food source. Matthias's legs were shaking so much that he had to sit down again. They stared at each other. Matthias could think of nothing to say. The cat spoke again. This time, its voice was indignant.
Well, have you nothing to say for yourself, mouse? Where are your manners? Don't you think you should apologize for leaping into my mouth like that?
Matthias managed to stand again. He bowed shakily.
I beg your pardon, sir. It was purely accidental. I fell, you see. Please accept my humble apologies. I am Matthias of Redwall, and I sincerely hope I have not disturbed you in any way.
The cat sniffed distantly.
Yes. At least you seem to have some sort of decent upbringing, Matthias of Redwall. I accept your apology. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Squire Julian Gingervere.
Pleased to meet you, Squire Julian.
The cat yawned regally.
You may call me Julian. The title is hereditary. I never wanted it. Squire of what? A broken-down ramshackle farm building and a stretch of river over yonder? One has no real friends, no trusty servants, not even a mate, for that matter. I suppose the Gingervere line will become extinct when I die.
Matthias could not help feeling a certain amount of sympathy for the lonely aristocrat.
At least you seem to lead a peaceful life.
Oh, spare me your platitudes, mouse! What would you know about loneliness and trying to preserve one's standards in a decaying world? I say, do you think you could manage to clean yourself up a bit? You look an absolute fright, standing there all covered in dust and straw. And while you're doing that, maybe you'd like to explain how you came to be sneaking around my barn.
As Matthias brushed himself down, he related the object of his mission. Julian looked down at him in surprise.
Captain Snow, eh? That old maniac. I've forbidden him the use of my barn, you know. What a thoroughly dreadful bird. He eats anything that moves or crawls. Atrocious table manners, too. All that regurgitating of bone and fare.
Could you tell me where I might find him, please?
Certainly. Snow lives in a hollow tree these days. I'll stretch a point and take you there. But please don't expect me to introduce you or even talk to him. When I barred Snow from here, we had a dreadful quarrel. Things were said that cannot be rescinded. I vowed that day never to speak to that old owl for as long as I live.
Matthias sensed that Julian and Snow had once been good friends. Maybe the rift in their relationship was the cause of Julian's present state of fatalism and gloom. He decided wisely not to pursue the matter further at the moment.